Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. It's time for Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott, episode 148 for March 19th, 2010. He's got a gun! Windows Weekly is brought to you by Audible.com. To download a free audiobook of your choice, go to audible.com/windows. And by Carbonite, the leader in online backup. Backup your PC or Mac off-site securely and automatically. For a free trial offer plus 2 free months with purchase, go to Carbonite.com. Offer code TWIT. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show that covers every single thing in the world of Microsoft. Joining us now, the star of the show and a man who is, in fact, at a big Microsoft trade show at this very moment, Mr. Paul Thurrott. Hello, Paul.
Hello.
Editor-in-chief of the Windows Supersite, winsupersite.com. Supersite for Windows.
I need to get a title.
Yeah, what is your title? I just made it up that you're EIC. You're the guy.
I'm the only guy.
You're the guy.
There's got to be a title for a guy like that. Lord of all he surveys. Something
there
like that.
There you go. Lord of all he surveys.
I kind of like the term major domo.
That's what I usually call you.
I wish I could be a barista.
You can be. All you need is a coffee machine. Of course you could be a barista.
Serving it up.
He's a barista. What else? You are the news editor of Windows IT Pro.
What else must we list?
What else?
Before the show
Let me look at this cheat sheet I've written on my hand. I have it right here. You also are the author of Windows 7 Snickers.
Snickers. Windows 7 Snickers.
I can't quite read that. Windows 7 Secrets from Wiley & Sons. And he joins us every week to talk about the latest from Windows. You're at Mix.
Yes.
What is Mix? Does Mix stand for something?
That's a good question. I don't think so. It has historically meaning for 5 years, you know, the length it's been running. But it started out as a web development show. And it's they've sort of broadened the scope to just be for developers, which, of course, is what PDC is. But this particular show, there was a lot of Windows Phone 7 news, which has been quite interesting, but also the web developer stuff. So, you know, it's funny when you hear developer conference, it doesn't sound very interesting. But, you know, the WinHack shows that Microsoft has done for device developers, the PDC shows, and the Mix shows have generally been pretty interesting, actually.
So how big is it? Is it, you know, 100?
It's not that big. They have it at the Mandalay Bay Hotel. Yeah, thousands, probably several thousand people.
Well, that's pretty big. And who gets invited? Just web developers? Obviously the press.
Well, I think people pay to go. Developers, you know, that want to learn about Microsoft's upcoming technologies. And I think what's really happening here at the show, and this has been underreported because, of course, there are big events occurring as well, is that what we're really seeing is the merging of the web and Windows development worlds, right, through this Silverlight conduit, right? Silverlight that started as this tiny subset of Microsoft's desktop programming APIs for the web, right, primarily for video, and has really turned into something that is good for sophisticated web applications, but also for what they're now calling, and I really find this hilarious, out-of-browser applications, right? Or as you might know them, applications.
Out-of-browser right? applications.
I mean, think about
you
it.
You mean
right?
like Word, Excel, that kind of thing?
Yeah. Exactly, right. So it's funny to me that we've moved to that place now. But, you know, I think Silverlight is going to evolve over time to become a replacement for things like WPF, you know, Windows Presentation Foundation.
Well, so I had to be corrected when I thought, I thought that Silverlight, at first I thought, well, it's a Flash clone.
Right. And when it first came out, that's sort of what it was. But you know, the very first version of Silverlight was all about video on the web.
Right.
You know, starting with the second version, they expanded its capabilities. It's what it really is a subset of the .NET framework.
Okay.
A runtime environment, a programming environment, a developer framework, you know, managed code framework. It's grown in scope. You know, there are visual designers for it, and You can create these out of browser applications now and so forth. It's very sophisticated. So I think as Microsoft pushes for HTML5 on the web, you know, on the traditional web and its browser, like other browser makers are doing, simultaneously, it's also pushing this more advanced environment that can make hybrid applications and just, you know, pure applications, I guess we would call them.
So is there another...
another thing?
Thing? Yeah.
There are all kinds of other things. Sure.
Isn't there a WPF, kind of like a Flex style WPF?
Yeah. So actually Silverlight is becoming, I think, a replacement for WPF. WPF okay. debuted right before Windows Vista, or in Windows Vista, they backported it to Windows XP.
That's the Windows presentation.
Yeah. It is itself a managed code, meaning a, you know, a .NET based programming environment or developer framework, runtime environment for, well, actually just a, I would say developer framework for the graphical part of applications. You know, Microsoft has other related technologies for developers that handle things like intra-application communications and so forth. And
it's amazing. The Microsoft toolkit is so huge. Yeah. And I think for some it's daunting because I guess if you're a pro, it's not. You like the choices, but
it's daunting. you know, this harkens back to an issue I recall from my own days as a programmer when Microsoft, it seemed every year, would come up with a new library for accessing databases, you know, a different method of getting at the data,
right.
Databases. And it seemed like every year there was a different one.
You don't want that many things.
No, but I this is part of the struggle, I think, to move from, you know, the Win32 APIs of the past, really messy coding styles and trying to make something that makes more sense. And, it's a little bit of kicking and screaming as we head to that future. But when you look at things like Silverlight of today, which, by the way, has progressed very rapidly, you know, it's sophisticated. And the tools that you can use to develop to this are very interesting. I mean, there's the traditional Visual Studio stuff. But then there's these designer tools like Expression Blend, which look like Adobe tools almost. You know, they're, lots of palettes and drag and drop. And they're beautiful beautiful solutions for creating nice-looking applications or web applications. So it's getting sophisticated.
Yeah. I mean, I'm thinking of there are some programs written in WPF. It does look nice. I'm thinking somebody in the chat room mentioned it. This is a good example. Seismic's Twitter client, it's called Look.
Well,
and that's sure, gorgeous. But, it's gorgeous.
Yeah. Although, you know, Seismic is one of those companies that will make a version of their Twitter stuff in almost any environment just so they can show up at everyone's show and, you know, tout it.
Well, they do. They do an Adobe Air version. But Look is Windows only. It's based on WPF. Yeah, yeah. And so it's very distinctive.
There aren't any high-quality, high-profile examples of good WPF applications. Visual Studio 2010, for example, is actually a WPF application. But when you look at it,
you can't
it
tell.
Looks like the traditional, right. I mean real traditional. Yeah, it looks like it was made in 2003.
Right.
But I think the point of what they're doing with this release from that standpoint is just to get that in place. And then in the future, I think we'll see something more. Not that a developer environment needs to be visually exciting per se, but I think we'll see more interesting effects now that they have that base under it.
So Mix is about that, yep. But also I imagine there's a little bit of Windows Phone 7 talk as well, right?
Yeah, so this week they showed off some Windows Phone stuff. They showed us some IE9 stuff. And I think as far as Windows Phone goes, you know, they made the big announcement at Barcelona, right, at the Mobile World Congress last month. And what's really going to happen is over the course of the year, there are going to be these different milestones where they come out and they release more information. So this is the second big event for this. And of course, because this is a developer show, they showed off the developer tools, which are all free and available to anyone who wants them. They showed off some more information about the Windows Phone itself. And, a lot of people now finally have had a chance to sit down and get their hands on it and take a look at it. You know, some of the things, not to spend too much time on this, but looking forward, some of the other things that are going to happen, you can expect next month, the month after that, there to be things like, you know, what's going on with Windows Live? Because there is a way forward coming. What's going on with the Office stuff and how is it going to integrate with the Office applications on your PC, but also with the Office services in the cloud? And then, what is the story for enterprises? You know, people look at this phone, and Microsoft's very upfront about this. You know, it's very obviously geared toward consumers. But, you know, the one thing that Microsoft may have gotten right with Windows Mobile right before it is, you know, the enterprise stuff. It was always a good solution for those people. You want to access your corporate email. You want to integrate with your you know, the corporate file servers or, you know, SharePoint type stuff. You know, it's going to have that too. So these are three things I think that will be coming down the road. So if you think, if you look at Mix as a kind of a waypoint, you know, on the way to release, I think that's the right way to look at it because we're still in early days here.
Right, right. What else is going on at Mix?
Well, I mean, you know, the big thing this week, I would say, is actually an almost spastic overreaction to what I consider to be non-news, you know.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, and welcome to the tech industry, Paul. You know, I'm so shocked to discover that people get things wrong all the time, and then it gets, you know, widely reported. You know, this has nothing to do with Mix, and in fact, it's not in our show notes, but you'll appreciate this one because I'm sure you saw this. The Wall Street Journal wrote a story based on absolutely nothing that there are people with iPhones at Microsoft who have to hide them because now Microsoft has some kind of crazy anti-iPhone policy, which is not really the case. But this story was repeated, I think, in every single tech news outlet on earth.
Yeah.
You know, as if it were some big, as if it were an event, like a story.
Well, it's juicy. It's gossip. People love gossip.
But it's just, it's baloney.
Right.
Right. The truth behind the iPhone stuff at Microsoft is that Microsoft has their own mobile platform. And one of the things they were doing in the past was allowing employees to get their own phone and then Microsoft would pay for it. And now what they're saying is, look, you have to get a phone that's one of our phones, and we'll pay for that.
We won't pay for an iPhone.
Which, by the way, is incredibly reasonable.
No, you want people to eat their own dog food.
Steve Ballmer, the CEO of Microsoft, in a comedic turn,
yes,
saw an iPhone at an internal company event, grabbed it, and pretended to stomp on it, right, as a joke.
Right.
But this was seen as a corporate mandate from on high that Steve Jobs hates the iPhone, and thus you must hide your iPhone and not have one, you know, which is insane. It's depressing to me how people react to Microsoft, you know, because as I think we've talked about this a lot in the past, you know, there's plenty of stuff to get upset about with this company. I mean, they can be incredibly idiotic, but this type of stuff is just not real. It's just, it's fake. And I don't like the fake sensational stuff. You know, I don't understand that. So with regards to Windows Phone, there were three things that came up this week that I think were overreported and wrong, you know, reported in the wrong way. The first one is just an opinion, I would say, not so much just dead, you know, black and white fact versus fiction, but it involves the Windows Marketplace for mobile or Windows Marketplace for phone. You know, one of the decisions Microsoft made was that, unlike with Windows Mobile, you wouldn't be able to buy applications for the phone anywhere other than via Microsoft through their own store. And that store will be available on the phone over the air, as it is on the iPhone, and it will be available on the PC via the Zune PC software, which will be updated, you know, to accommodate the phone. Now, the reason they want to do this is, you know, when you look back at Windows Mobile, there are so many things wrong with it. But if you had to pick out one that was like the biggest problem, it would be that Microsoft didn't control the experience enough. They allow their partners to, you know, to dictate the terms. So if Microsoft released a software update for Windows Mobile, its partners would not implement it on their phones because, you know, wireless carriers don't want to give you a free software update. They want to sell you a new phone and extend your contract up for 2 years.
Right.
If you've ever gone to any of the mobile websites you can go to buy applications for different platforms, you know how horrible that experience is. The fear with this, of course, is that Apple or Microsoft will pull an Apple, you know, that they'll be too controlling. But I think there's a happy middle ground that can exist between, say, you know, the free-willing style of the past and what Apple does, right, which I think is unreasonable, to be honest. And by the way, you have to know absolutely nothing about the tech industry to think that Microsoft could behave like Apple and get away with it. It's never going to happen.
No, that's true.
They won't even try. So this is one of those false indignity things, right? The people who are complaining about this do not now own Windows Mobile phones and are not incensed because they can't go to that crappy website they have to visit now to buy applications for this OS that they're not using. It's complete baloney. It's just made up. So to me, this is a non-event. And if you feel otherwise, I'd like to hear about it now. Because I just don't understand what the complaint is. You know? So the second one would be with cut, copy, and paste, right?
Yeah, that was a big story.
Yeah. 3 years ago, when Apple announced their iPhone, I, among and many other people, complained that the iPhone wouldn't support copy and paste, a very basic bit of functionality, something that had been around in computing systems for decades, something that existed at the time in the smartphone platforms of the day. you know, how could Apple not implement such a basic feature? Flashing forward a couple of years now, Apple has implemented copy and paste. And anyone who's used it will tell you, and you know this, it's kind of, you know, it's cool that it's there. But the truth is, it doesn't come up all that often. It's neat when it does, and you can have it. It's tough to do cut, copy, and paste with your finger on a, you know, with text that's small. And Apple does a nice job, I would say, of making it happen. Microsoft, to their credit, and I think this is something, again, that people don't seem to understand. When they look, you know, they could have done a Me Too phone, right? They could have done what they did in the past. They could have released a little mini PC with a start menu and, you know, all the, you know, a little Explorer application and all that stuff. It could have been just like a little PC, and it would have had cut and paste, you know, just like a PC does. But as they've said time and time again, you know, the phone is not a PC. It shouldn't work like a PC. Now, that said, you know, as they reimagine this device as something brand new, it is going to run Office, right? So you're going to have Word on there. You're going to have Excel. And there are instances where cut and paste, I think, would be something important to have. So the truth is, they are going to implement cut, copy, and paste. They don't believe they will be able to get it in there in time for the September launch, but they're shooting for that. They're not going to implement it exactly as cut, copy, paste as we know it today. They have a new way of doing this. Someone suggested to me that it would be called a share interface, like where you would select something and say share, you know, and whatever. It doesn't matter how they do it, but the point is, it's not that they're not doing it. It's that Windows Phone is a brand new platform. It's not the same as Windows Mobile. It's not as simple as cut, copying, you know, pasting their own code and putting it into Windows Phone. So it's a new system. It does things differently. They're going to do it. They just need to figure it out. And by the way, part of owning the experience involves Microsoft's PC partners are forced to allow Microsoft to update the software on those phones. That means Microsoft can ship an update that includes this functionality at any time. And that is exactly what they're planning to do.
Well, you know, I think some of the reason there was so much attention is because Apple got so much heat for three years of no copy.
So I received a number of identical emails from readers.
I mean
literally identical emails, yeah. Which I find suspicious.
Yes.
And what they said in a nutshell was, you know, Paul, you complained about this stuff when Apple did it, and now Microsoft does it, and you give them a complete pass. Clearly, you are one-sided and biased and all that kind of stuff. The way I would say that is, you know, we all mature over time and time goes on. Maybe the correct way to look at this is the mindset of me, a Microsoft guy, 3 years ago with experience with Microsoft smartphones was cut, copy, and paste is something that I have now. I don't understand why Apple wouldn't implement it.
Right.
You know, maybe Apple was onto something because in that sense, the iPhone wasn't so much a copy of a PC or a Mac as it was a new thing. Right. And who knows? Maybe their plan was all along to implement this at some future time. I mean, them being Apple, they would never admit to that. They would just release it later as some big new thing that people would stand up and applaud at a trade show. But it doesn't matter how you do it. You know, the point is, I sort of respect now that Microsoft is approaching this as a new thing. But I also know that they're working on it. So, I mean, right. I'm not really sure what the big controversy is here. They're intent is to add this functionality to the platform. So let's not stress over it.
Why is it? I guess because you don't have a keyboard, you have to be more innovative in how you do it. It always puzzled me that Apple didn't include it. And so a lot of people said, oh, well, they have to think of a way to do it on a touchscreen. And of course, the way that a number of people suggested years before Apple actually implemented it ended up being what Apple did.
And by the way, they did a nice job.
Yeah, it works pretty well. It is. I can see it's a little challenging.
For what it is. I mean, in other words, it's not something I want to do all the time.
No.
But you know, the couple times I've needed it, it works.
I'll tell you, it's hard when you can't do it. And it's hard on a smartphone because you're using a browser, and there's many of the time you want to paste a password in.
Your finger is one-third the size of the screen.
Right.
And you want to select this little thing.
It's hard to do.
Yeah, you click something by mistake.
Somebody in the chat room said, and this might also be a valid reason why they don't do it, patents. There might be a lot of patents.
I considered that, but Microsoft had cut, copy, and paste in their previous smartphones, and they can cite that as a prior use.
How did they implement it in the previous phones?
Well, you got to remember the interface in the previous phones was based around the notion of a stylus. So you could literally just click, hold down on the screen, and pull across, and it would make a selection box.
Yeah, you can't do that with your thumb.
No, you have to do it a slightly different way, so we'll see. Okay.
Okay.
The third of these, and perhaps the most controversial, is involving multitasking. Microsoft has said from day one, we're going to do multitasking on the phone. And then we get to Mix and they say, well, you know, it's a little different than, you know, maybe what we suggested vaguely in the past. And the way it's going to work is this. First of all, it does multitasking. So let's just get that out of the way. It does do multitasking. Microsoft's applications at launch, its own applications, the internal applications, will all do this, right? They'll be able to run in the background if that's required, as occurs under any multitasking system. But what they're implementing for third parties, and by the way, this is, again, and they've been very public and honest about this, and I don't understand why this is controversial or why it's been so widely misreported. They are going to evolve this over time. But at launch, and again, brand new platform, they need to have some real-world experience by how these things impact battery life and all that kind of stuff. So they're going to work on it. But the plan on day one is to implement something that I think is a reasonable compromise between zero multitasking, which is what the iPhone essentially offered to third parties when it launched, and then maybe one step up from that, which is notifications, right, and true multitasking. And that is this. Applications that are in use and then get switched out of don't actually just crash to the floor and die. They are suspended.
Yeah.
But they're suspended with state, right? If you switch to another application and do something else and then switch back to that previous application, which, by the way, is very handily done on the Windows Phone thanks to its back button, it just resumes and you're back right where you left off. That is the most common case for multitasking, right? You're doing something one app, you have to go to another app for some reason, and then you want to go back, right? That's actually kind of hard to do on the iPhone, especially if those applications happen to have icons on different screens, you know? It can be a little ponderous.
Right.
Windows Phone will also offer a notification system. So I'll just throw that out there. It's not really part of the discussion, but that's something that...
Notifications is something that that Apple didn't offer right away.
Right.
They have implemented fairly poorly on the iPhone, and it's really well done on the Android, and it really makes it clear why you need good notifications.
Right. Not at Mix, but the week before Mix, when I talked to the Windows Mobile folks, one of the interesting conversations I had was around the notification thing, and what they said to me was... actually, I can't tell you what they said. Suffice to say... It's going to be more sophisticated than what Apple does. Let's put it that way.
Okay, that's good.
I'll just say that.
Just say that.
Anyway, now there is going to be a chance. There is a possibility in this multitasking scenario that a third-party application will be suspended because the user switches to something else.
Right.
And then maybe they switch to something else. And then maybe they switch to something else. And maybe time goes by. And maybe it's the next day and they do something else. And they kind of forget about that first app. Eventually, the device is going to run out of memory. And that suspended app is going to have to be killed, right?
Uh-huh.
And that's what happens on the iPhone the second you switch out of any application.
It just gets killed.
Just gets killed. Now.
And it's one of the things that doesn't happen very well on Android and causes problems.
Okay. But if you think about the way the iPhone works from a developer's perspective, you know, when you develop an application for the iPhone, you're taught that the user can close the application at any time. Thus, there needs to be an ongoing thing occurring where you're saving the state if that's important to the application. Because if the user runs the application, you want to give them the opportunity to get back to where they were.
Yeah.
Right. Now, and that's how it works. And it works. It works okay. There's nothing wrong with it. It's kind of a known quantity, right? So if you're going to develop an application for Windows Phone, you're going to want to do the same thing, right? You won't have to do anything if the app suspends and resumes. You'll have to do nothing. It will just work. But if the application is actually forced to quit, you'll just have to do what you have to do on the iPhone. So to me, again, this is a reasonable compromise. It's something that's actually going to get better over time, but it's already better than it is on the iPhone, and it does do multitasking. And I don't understand why when people discuss this, they can't just say it like that, because that's all this is. It's not controversial. It's not a problem. It's not something bad. It just works. It's fine. And so that's Paul's common sense of the day.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay.
I mean,
Will third party apps have the ability to do that, or is it just going to be
the third party apps? Yeah, that is the situation for third party apps.
So all apps. And that's one thing that the iPhone does. It does multitask if you're Apple.
If you're Apple, right now. And by the way, this is very important. I think, Microsoft is more open than Apple in the sense that, I mean, anyone is more open than Apple, but you know, and perhaps not as open as Android, let's say. It's still a proprietary software system and all that. But one of the things they've been very upfront about is, look, this is a new platform. It is evolving over time. We all already have plans in place to allow even better forms of multitasking for third-party applications. But we need to understand the impact that this stuff is going to have on the device, because really it's about the user experience, right? You don't want to just allow everyone to multitask in the background and then have the battery last for 15 minutes, you know? So they're examining it. It's not like they live up in a cloud somewhere and they're dictating, you know, from Mount Olympus or something, you know, this is the way it's going to be. I mean, they have already said this will get better over time, but I would just point, this is already better than it is on, say, the iPhone.
Right. Right. Are we done? Mr. Microsoft apologist, have you had enough?
Let's talk about IE9, because I have some more apologizing to do.
All right, we will talk about IE9. Before we do, though, let's talk a little bit about Audible. No, we'll save Audible for later. Carbonite, how about that?
Okay.
Carbonite.com. I like to remind people about Carbonite, because people often call me and say, I forgot to back up. And when people forget to back up, of course, the minute you forget to back up, something happens. You lose your data. Your hard drive dies. Your laptop gets stolen. There's a fire or something, and everything is gone. That's why I always say backup. And when I say backup, I mean choose something that will do it automatically, because you'll forget, and choose something that will do it off-site, because even if you have backups, good backups off-site, there are plenty of scenarios where that's not enough. That fire I mentioned, a flood, you can really lose everything. A burglar, a bad guy. So I want you to try Carbonite.com. This is kind of meets my careful criteria for a perfect backup solution. It's automatic. In fact, if you go right now to Carbonite.com, use the offer code WindowsWeekly, you can try it. No credit card needed for 2 weeks. You'll see it immediately starts backing up. Now, actually, it's not immediate, because the first thing it does is encrypts it using AES 256-bit encryption, the strongest encryption you can get. Then it uses SSL to transmit it up to the Carbonite servers, where it is, of course, you know, backed up in an enterprise network operations center and several operations centers. So it's always safe. Carbonite.com. Automatic backup, encrypted. Oh, did I mention you can get it back anytime? You know, sometimes people try these services and they I'm backing up, and they don't check out the restore feature. Try the restore while you're doing the 2-week free trial. They have an iPhone application. They are working applications for all the platforms, of course. I'm sure Windows Mobile 7. They have, of course, you can log on at any computer and download that file. So that file is available to you anywhere. You can check it. You can restore with just a click of the mouse. Always safe, always secure, always backed up. Don't come crying to me if you lose your family photos or your important financial documents, your emails, your music. Now, I warned you. Carbonite.com. Use the offer code WindowsWeekly for 2 weeks absolutely free. If you decide to buy after you try, you'll get 2 months free with the coupon code WindowsWeekly. But you got to try it first. Carbonite.com. It's backup done right. You got to back it up to get it back with Carbonite. Moving right along. So, IE9.
I love how you look at me and just pause.
IE9.
It's like you saw a crazy guy in an alley or something.
He's not, folks. He's Paul Thurrott.
He's got a gun.
He's not in an alley. He's actually in the beautiful Bellagio Hotel. There's a gold lamé curtain behind him.
Yeah.
Gorgeous.
I wish I had the remote control for this somewhere near me, but
because you could show us the fountain.
It's over by the bed.
You mean there's a remote that you carry around with you?
You can't open this without a remote.
You've tried, I'm sure.
It took me 3 days to figure that out. I was propping it open with a chair. You know. Like, why won't this damn thing open?
The Bellagio is a very nice hotel. One of my favorite hotels in Vegas. And beautiful. You have a fountain view, which costs extra.
Well, you know, I'm here as part of a Penton show. That occurred right on the heels of
your
Mix.
Your publisher.
And so we actually got a block of rooms at a discounted rate. So it was actually cheaper to stay here than it would have been for me to go to Mandalay Bay.
Oh.
Yeah.
And Mandalay Bay is where the conference is, right?
Right.
So ironically, you're on the Strip, but you're not where you want. You got to take a cab.
Well, the first two, that's why, you know, I've had some long days. So the first 2 days, I left here between 6:30 and 7:30 in the morning to get over there. And, you know, I didn't arrive home until almost midnight both nights. And, it's been a late, it would have been nice having the opportunity just to go up to the room and crash for a second or drop some stuff off. And that's not really, these things couldn't be further apart, you know, and still be in the same state. You know, the Bellagio is right in the middle of the strip, and Mandalay Bay, from what I can tell, is in
it's in
East Texas in Muncie, or something.
It's really far away.
It's way out there.
Way out there. So is IE9, are they talking about IE9 at MIX? I guess they are. That's kind of where they would talk about it, right?
Yeah, they did a very quick preview of IE9 at the Windows 7 launch, I think, right? I'm sorry, PDC.
PDC, okay.
And they talked about some of the basic themes that were for the browser. You know, there are lots of calls, and I've gotten involved in this this kind of mob mentality thing. You know, well, why don't you guys adopt WebKit? You know, why do you even bother? You know, that kind of stuff. I actually spent some time last week with the IE9 team with some other journalists and reviewers, and we saw this stuff early. And you know, one of the complaints I had to them privately was, you know, you're going to show that people are waiting for this information. They know you're going to talk about IE9. And look, I get that it's a developer show, but you got to have some indication of where you're going with the UI for this thing. Because when they see this thing you're going to release, they're not going to be happy. You know,
does it look very different?
Well, no. They're completely overhauling the user interface.
Okay.
They're not showing that here, and they're not providing it to the public. So what they've handed out to the public is this IE9 preview that has literally a plain border around it and a little tiny menu bar and no UI at all. But what it has is the IE9 rendering engine behind it, you know, so you can test it on your sites and so forth. You know, that's in keeping with the point of MIX as a developer show, and it's completely understandable. It's just that
We don't want the Chrome. We want to see how our sites render.
Absolutely. But, you know, I mean, for the wider world, I think it was, you know, people are going to look at this and be like, what? What is this?
It's bland. Looks like Notepad, you know? Yeah.
I think the big news here is that Microsoft is embracing HTML5, which is fascinating because, as we just discussed, Microsoft makes Silverlight. So, you know, they make an interesting case, and this is something I'd never previously considered in my own sort of backing of WebKit, which is that, you know, WebKit gets revved and branched and is different on different browsers. In fact, there are really good examples of Safari and Google Chrome rendering the same site in completely different ways because there are just differences in the way that they do things. So it's not like there really is this one thing called WebKit. So that's one important bit. Their point isn't so much that we want to render things better than WebKit. Their point is we want to render things identically to WebKit and to Gecko and to anyone else that's going to implement HTML5, which is this moving target, right? It's not something that's been finalized yet. In fact, they made a really good comparison between HTML5 and 802.11n. You know, where for 2 years before this thing was finalized, people were releasing pre-N routers, you know, many of which were later never upgraded, most of which, you know, operated G speeds and so forth. And that, you know, when you're releasing so-called finished versions of a product that are based on a pre-release spec, you know, there are problems that can occur. So what they're asking as sort of a call to action for the entire web development community is that if there's a spec, then every browser should render to that spec identically, right?
Yes.
From a quality standpoint.
Yes.
So if you're going to make a rectangle that has rounded corners and a dashed, you know, style,
it should look the same everywhere.
It should look the same on every browser. And that's not the case.
Not right at all. So not even close. Yeah.
That's one of the things they want to do. One of the places where they just want to exceed what's going to be possible in other browsers is by providing the underlying hardware acceleration capabilities of Windows to the browser. So when you're rendering text or graphics or SVG graphics or vector graphics especially, you're going to have the GPU at your beck and call. And then just for general JavaScript performance, you know, you probably appreciate this. If you follow, you know, any of the Safari stuff or Chrome or whatever, or Mozilla as well, they all talk about their JavaScript rendering engines. You know, they all have names and they, you know, everyone knows about these things. So IE9 now has a JavaScript rendering engine with its own name too, you know. But the thing that's interesting about this one in comparison to other JavaScript rendering engines is, or I guess not really a rendering engine, but JavaScript engines, I guess, is that it can use multiple cores. So if there's JavaScript, that will actually be shut it off to one of the other cores, freeing up the CPU. If there's any rendering occurring, that will be shuttled off to the GPU. That's also freeing up the CPU. And so some of the performance advantages of IE9 are actually kind of staggering. And It's really, really interesting. Very, very high quality.
I'm just glad to see them supporting HTML5. And
yeah, I think the standards thing is the biggest deal. And I also would point to the fact that because they're attaching themselves to HTML5, which is so smart, and if you think about it, anyone who was saying Microsoft should drop Trident and pick up WebKit instead, right? Anyone who said that, you know, if you think about what you're really asking for there is, you want IE to be compatible with the standards-based web, right? I mean, that's really what you're looking for. And that's what they've announced. You know, not that they're going to change rendering engines, but rather that they're going to support HTML5, which is the web, you know, the web of today and the web of the future. The web that doesn't require browser plugins to do things like video and audio, right? In this way, Microsoft is kind of joining Apple in their bid to rid the world of Flash, right? You know,
That's right. HTML5 uses its own
It's buggy. It gets exploited.
Flash is terrible. Yes.
Yeah. It's another thing that needs to be updated. Yes. You know, if the browser just has these capabilities natively, you won't have to add as much junk to it to get it to do what you want it to do. So it also creates an interesting kind of a bifurcation of the web application market. So there's going to be the stuff that's possible with HTML5, which is pretty powerful, right? All of the modern high-end web applications that we see today are based on some type of adherence to HTML5, you know, Gmail and so forth. You know, what I think some people might still refer to this stuff as web 2.0 type stuff. It's very capable and powerful. But I think the next step up from that is going to be these Silverlight type environments. If you look at the NBC Olympics website, for example, which is a typical, it's like an application in your browser. It's crazy. It's beautiful. Lots of advanced functionality and so forth. And I think that stuff's going to move out of the browser. You know, the browser will be HTML5 and this other stuff will be, you know, what Microsoft's calling out of the browser applications, if you will. You know, and not coincidentally, Silverlight is also the development environment for Windows Phone, right? I think that's an important thing to note as well. So I think that's most of IE9. Let me just make sure I'm not missing anything.
People
here
are telling me that it renders very fast. They're very impressed.
It's crazy fast. It's crazy fast. Yeah. And it's the type of thing, you know, and again, these are Microsoft demos and so forth. But they put these demos up publicly so you can test them against whatever browser you want. They do these great. They did a little bit of it at Mix. They did more of it the week before. But they'll put all the different browsers side by side. And you can, you know, change the size of the graphics. They animate around in a circle, and they'll show you the frame rate and the CPU usage. And, you know, these other browsers are single core capable, and everything goes to the CPU. And IE9 is multi-core aware, and everything goes to the GPU. And it's smart. Amazing, yeah. Amazing what a difference that makes.
Very cool.
So there's no word in the timeline. They refuse to talk about that. It will ship before Windows 8. You know, my expectation is that it's going to ship in early 2000 or 2011. I think we'll see a beta, you know, late summer, early fall, that time frame. It will not run on Windows XP, which I think is just fine. But it's something to know.
Yeah, it is just fine. Yeah. Shall we move along to the most exciting story of the day?
Hold on. The one thing I didn't add this to the notes.
There's
I just
one.
Wanted to tell
yes.
people. Well, no, just one quick thing. You know, if you didn't make it to Mix, and I'm guessing most of you didn't, you know, all of the sessions and the keynotes are available in a video download form. So you can, it's like you're here after the fact. Very high quality too. The WMV versions of these videos are HD resolution, but they also have H.264 versions. So if you want to play them on a device like a Zune or an iPod or whatever iPhone, those will work fine. And they've been adding more and more videos every day. By the time the show's over, and actually it might be over as of today, the whole thing should be available, and it's all for free. So you can get those videos at live.visitmix.com.
Live.visitmix.com.
Yeah, and the way to do it is to navigate to sessions, and then you'll see a link for videos. And they also have a lot of the PowerPoint presentations as well.
That's great. So you don't really have to spend any money to go to Mix. You can get all the...
Yeah, I feel like an idiot for even coming here.
What the hell were you thinking? Who's the guy playing the instrument there?
His name is Bill Buxton, I think. And he's a Microsoft research guy. When he came out, we were live blogging, and I said, it looks like a homeless guy wandered out on the stage.
Well, now I'm going to play my stick.
Yeah, he pulled that thing out, and I said, he's got a gun.
Great. You must be fun to go to these conferences with. This is good. So you can actually see a lot of these sessions. Yeah, that's great.
Them. Oh, every single one of them.
Oh, that's great. And you're right. It's high quality. So
the thing you're doing is streaming, but you can download them all as well.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
That's really neat.
Yep.
Yeah, it's right. Nice. There's the slide. There's the video. Yeah. Well, it's in their interest.
Of course.
After all, this is promoting
Microsoft. It's in the public interest, Leo. You know,
it's for the good, the greater good of mankind.
For the good of man.
Yes. We come in peace for all mankind.
That's right. We come in pieces.
Stream in peace. So, Windows 7 Server 2008 R2 SP1. Pretty exciting.
So I
have no idea what it means, but I'm excited.
I love that you're excited. You know, we've mentioned this in the past, and we've mentioned it because, again, you know, people have gotten this wrong. And I've been saying for months now, you know, Windows 7 Service Pack 1 will be a non-event. Windows Server 2008 R2 SP1 will be a big event. And Microsoft publicly acknowledged this week that that is, in fact, the case. So they're adding a major bit of functionality to Server with regards to virtualization. We don't have to discuss that in any detail. But as far as Windows 7 is concerned, it really is just going to be an aggregation of previous fixes and some small changes, nothing dramatic. So just an update to verify that that is, in fact, the truth.
Yes. Time frame again?
They're not saying, but I heard 1 year after GA, which would be October.
October.
Yeah, that could slip. I mean, it's a service pack. Who cares? I mean, it could slip, but
that's how they used to do it.
Q4 2010.
They used to do it 1 year later. They'd ship the rollout, all the patches, roll up of all the patches. An update on Windows Virtual PC.
Right. So when Windows 7 shipped, Microsoft shipped a feature, kind of a perk, really, for Windows 7 users called Windows Virtual PC, the latest version of Virtual PC. Virtual PC being their desktop-based virtualization solution for individuals, right? This is not an enterprise tool. It allows you to run a virtualized copy of another OS under your host OS. There's some big advantages to Windows Virtual PC, especially this, I'm not sure what it's called, what this feature is called exactly, but you can run virtualized applications side by side with Windows 7 applications. The idea being that if you have some Windows XP or some applications that ran on Windows XP, but wouldn't run under Windows 7 for whatever reason, you can install them under Windows XP in this virtual environment. But then the application runs out in Windows 7 or appears to run in, you know, Windows 7. You don't have to, you know, manage two separate environments. So if you're familiar with, I think it's Parallels, they call this coherent mode. You know, VMware has a similar mode, you know, for if you're running virtualization on the Mac. They offer that on Windows via Windows Virtual PC. The downside to Windows Virtual PC and XP mode previously was that it required that you had an Intel or AMD CPU that had specific hardware virtualization capabilities. The AMD side was pretty easy. Most AMD chips just support this. Figuring out if your Intel-based PC supported this was a nightmare.
Nightmare. You saw that chart Ed Bott made.
Exactly. So what they've done is they've removed that requirement.
Oh, hello.
If you have hardware-based virtualization, it will just use it and it will run better. If you don't, it will just work. So you can download that update today. You just go to Microsoft.com/virtualPC, it will get you there. If not, Microsoft.com/Windows/VirtualPC will get you there. And then you can re-download this and you'll get that solution. Now, you have to have Windows Virtual PC, which is the underlying virtualization software, works on any version of Windows 7. To get the free version of XP and XP mode, you have to have professional or higher.
Right. They, all the other VM programs work just fine with all Intel processors, so it only made sense. It's just not as, I presume it's not as fast or reliable or something.
I guess so. Although I have to be honest, you know, for this kind of thing, I've never really noticed a big difference.
Yeah.
I mean, so I'm glad they did this. I never understood what the point of that was.
Now, Opera.
I love to talk about Opera because they're such an important company.
Well, you know what's funny about Opera is that they got the browser ballot through. And and as a result, they reported a significant uptick in adoption rates in Europe.
Sure.
And about 2 days later, they also announced that their new Opera 10.5 had a severe exploit that was unpatched.
Yep.
And
so,
you shouldn't
use this,
it.
Is this ironic or is it hypocritical?
I think it's kismet.
Oh, I see. Like a karma type
Karma. Karma's a bitch. I don't know. I don't have anything against Opera, but I just think it's unfortunate that they had this big uptick in users right at the same time they had a massive exploit.
Yeah, and in the theme of, you know, give them an inch, they'll take a mile kind of thing, you know, these other little browser makers like Sleipnir and, you know, whoever these people are, you know, they're actually complaining to the EU now that they don't have enough exposure.
Ugh.
Through this little, you know, it's almost like they can smell the blood in the water. But I think the funny thing for those folks is that the EU has clearly moved on, right? They're worried about Google now. They don't really care anymore. And I hope and pray that nobody entertains some notion where this browser ballot screen has to change to accommodate a graphical representation of all 12 of these browsers. And that maybe even they could be included in that random shuffling so that it would be possible, you know, for Sleipnir to be the first choice in that stupid, stupid dialogue box. You know, if you live in the EU, I feel your pain, but I beg you to ignore this UI. This is the dumbest thing I've ever seen. Well, let me think about that.
Yeah.
It's certainly dumbest. One of the dumbest things I've ever seen. And when Microsoft complained during their U.S. antitrust trial, I remember the argument, you know, do you really want the government determining the user interface of Windows? Really? Well, this is what it looks like. Enjoy that.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
It's not Sleipnir, by the way. Sleipnir is not a great browser.
Sleipnir, yeah. Who cares? So,
just in case anybody's wondering.
Yeah. Let's make sure we get that one right.
Yeah. Did you read, oh my God, Tim Bray, who's the creator of CSS, blogged. He took a job at Google. I guess he didn't move. He took a job at Google and wrote a blog post about why he didn't.
By the way, that's how you can tell when you're important. You know? He's going to stay. I think he lives in Vancouver, right?
He's going to stay right there.
Staying in Vancouver.
Yeah. He's going to be an evangelist for something.
For Android.
Android. Yeah. And he explained in his blog post why he believes in Android and does not believe in Apple.
I have to tell you that I feel really weird about this because I absolutely agree with his assessment of the Apple stuff. I get it, right?
Yeah.
I disagree that Google is the one doing it right. In fact, we talked about this maybe a week or two ago. I really feel, I mean, I like Android's fine within the context of let's make something that's exactly like the iPhone, basically, but make it, you know, a free platform that everyone can implement. You know, the biggest advantage of Android, and really, let me think about that. Maybe not the only, okay, it's not the only advantage, but the biggest advantage of Android is that it's available in a variety of form factors from a variety of wireless carriers, right? I would have to think that something like 90% of iPhone owners would switch from AT&T right now if they could, despite the fact that they've made some decent improvements.
Well, and the Nexus One is now available on, you can use it on AT&T's network. It's coming to Sprint's network, coming to Verizon's
network. How psychotic would you have to be to want to use this thing on AT&T? Well, actually, I suppose if you had an iPhone and wanted
that's
a Nexus
that's what
one,
they're aiming that at.
Plug the SIM in. Right. Is that how it works?
Yeah.
Okay.
And Sprint is going to sell it, and Verizon is going to sell it. So,
you know, in this city, AT&T is particularly bad. Right. My phone has dropped. I'm sure I complained about this during CES. It just drops the call. If when I talked to my wife, my sister called me, it dropped 3 times. I was talking to my wife this morning, it dropped 2 times. Every time I've talked to my wife, the phone has dropped the call at least 1 time.
Yeah.
And it does it without any
warning.
Does
it to me too. So
there's no sense that it's fading. You know, it's not like when you go in an elevator and you can tell it's going bad. You're literally just talking.
It says, although, doesn't that happen with everybody? I mean, on every carrier or no?
This is insidious, Leo. I've never experienced
it. It happens like more in AT&T.
It really does.
Yeah. Okay.
No, listen, I get it. You know, they've improved things. I know that. But I think there are just some cities where it's just not any good.
Right.
And Las Vegas is absolutely one of them. We were standing in
the casino. Oh, yeah, it's terrible in Las Vegas. Yeah.
People were playing craps. And me and the guy next to me, who, by the way, had a Windows mobile phone on AT&T, couldn't get it to do anything. And the guy next to us with his Nexus One was browsing the web and checking his email, no problem.
And Sprint works very well in Vegas. Vegas is a Sprint town.
Okay.
Let me read you what Tim Bray says in his blog post at tbray.org. Compete with Apple, you say? This is in his announcement of why he's going to work for Google. As of now, Apple's selling around 90,000 iPhones a day compared to about 60,000 Android handsets a day.
That's an interesting statistic, by the way.
Yeah, I don't know where he got that from. He doesn't source it.
He does work at Google now.
He might know.
Just, you know.
He might know.
All right, we accept that. We'll take that at face value. That's interesting.
That's impressive.
You know, by the way, 2/3 of, you know, the industry darling is Nice.
Not bad.
Now, listen to this, though.
This is the paragraph I thought for sure you'd love the most. The iPhone vision of the mobile internet's future omits controversy, sex, and freedom, but includes strict limits on who can know what and who can say what. It's a sterile, Disney-fied walled garden surrounded by sharp-toothed lawyers.
You know what it is? It's V for Vendetta.
It is.
Right? Or maybe that 1984
version. Let's get the mask. He says, the people who create the app serve at the landlord's pleasure and fear his anger. I hate it.
So, but, and that's the part I agree with that. I mean, is there something he said there that's not correct?
No.
I mean, it's incendiary.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit
worded, but
yeah, it's a little bit rhetorical, but it's not inaccurate.
It's V to Vendetta, for Vendetta. I mean, it's that language.
You know? He says, I hate it even though the iPhone hardware and software are great because freedom's not another word for anything. Nor is it an optional agreement or ingredient. He's right. And one of the reasons I did switch to the Nexus One, there are, you know, I have to say, as I've now used it for a month nonstop, there are some, you know, negatives to it. But it's open and anybody could put an application on it.
Two general comments about this. One is that it's very clear that there's a great possibility that what happened to the Mac with Windows is going to happen to the iPhone with Android, right? So there's one thing. I mean, it's the same scenario playing itself out, just a different company. So that's one thing. But, you know, if you're a big Google guy, you know, if you use Google services, and by the way, that's a big audience, you know, the Nexus One's kind of a no-brainer. Yeah. You know, the cost of going to that is so much less than any other system. And by the way, you should also factor in this divorce that's occurring between Apple and Google right now.
Oh, did you see the New York Times with all the vicious infighting?
Yeah, I mean, as good as some of the Google stuff is on the iPhone right now, I mean, that could fall off a cliff.
Oh, any day now. Now it gives credence to the rumor, which I thought was bogus, that Apple might be switching to Bing for its default search engine. Now it all makes sense.
There is no indication greater of the hatred between those companies than that.
That would be like... That's it. You know, but frankly, Paul, that's what's going to happen is that it's happened before. It throws Apple directly into the lap of Microsoft. And those two hate Google.
Which, by the way, is we have them right where we want them.
The enemy of my enemy is my friend, right?
Well, sure. I would, you know, one of the major downsides to Android is the lack of any cohesive digital media thing. You know, I think Apple has really nailed not just the process, right, of getting a content onto the device, which is excellent, but also this marketplace thing. You know, it is something that no one is going to be able to duplicate. You know, if Windows Phone 7 is perfect, which is impossible, it still won't have the vast array of content that's available to the iPhone. And that is just something you cannot overcome. You know, and it's just the way it's never going to happen. I mean, never. It's not like it's going to happen over time. It's never going to happen. And, you know, I think the best you can hope for is that you'll have a reasonable percentage of it, and that's it. And, you know, I think on the app front, you know, Google Android already is there. But when you look at digital media, you know, music and video, podcasts and audiobooks and the iTunes U stuff, which was just crazy good, there is no way. You know, Microsoft threw billions of dollars at Zune Marketplace and Zune Pass subscriptions, and it's great, and it's gone absolutely nowhere.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, Google's not going to do that. You know, there's not going to be a Google, like a G-Tunes application, Paul says, 2 seconds before they announce
G-Tunes, it. G-Tunes, now, you know, from Google.
But that is the type of thing that Google does, but I don't expect that.
Now, you know, I have to say, I've been very happy on the Nexus One because it's got the Amazon MP3 store. It integrates beautifully right into the player. I don't even have to connect to a computer. I just buy the songs. It's on there.
What if you want video, though?
No, there's no video. There's no video store. It's just music. But at least they've got the music store.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, it's okay. You're right.
What if you have your own music? I mean, what if you were? Well, you know, then, I've been using iTunes for 5 years, and I want to get it.
There's a couple of programs. There's one called Double Twist that will sync.
But this is for my wife or my mother.
Double Twist looks just like iTunes.
It looks just like iTunes. I know I've used Double Twist.
It works. It works great. It syncs your photos. It syncs your. It's just basically iTunes for Android.
It's not integrated and elegant. That's all.
No. It's not from Google.
The solution stinks.
Not from Google, but see, that's the point, is that it's a third-party application and it's third-party support. Apple eats up the oxygen by doing it all by itself and saying no one else can participate.
Oh, okay. Well, sure. So, obviously, there's a good end and a bad end to doing it all yourself, you know.
Exactly. I've always said it's like Mussolini.
These are the trade-offs we make in life.
The trains run on time.
Right. Well, you know, Mussolini ran the trains on time, and he ended up hanging upside down on a meat hook.
Right. Actually, the irony of it is, I've said several times that Apple's become like, you know, the new fascism, and you know, there are benefits, as we said, the trains run on time. And then I did some research, and in fact, the trains did not run on time under Mussolini.
That's great. So, you just weren't allowed to admit it, because after all, it was a dictatorship.
The trains are late all the time, but nobody said anything.
That they don't run on time now either.
Right.
In Italy, that is. You know, when my wife bought the Droid phone, the woman from Verizon actually told her that there was no documentation and that if you needed help, you needed to Google for it.
Oh, dear.
It reminds me of this thing, you know, and we do this without thinking. It's actually really funny. If you go into a restaurant, like, where did I just do this? Panera Bread, for example. You know, they give you a tray and they put plates on it and they give you a cup and stuff. And you go sit in the corner and you eat at the table. And then you actually bust the table yourself, right?
Yes.
You bring it to the trash. You actually separate the trash.
Yes.
And you do that yourself. You just paid for food.
Yes.
But you did the work at the end.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
It's quite a gimmick when we can convince people to do things for themselves, you know, when they're paying for a service. And that's sort of what, you know, I'm not saying this is the official stance of Google, but, you know, when you can tell people, you know, all the help you need
do
is
your
on
support.
You know, search Google, and they accept that without thinking. Yeah. I mean,
get a backbone. Do your own damn support.
Yeah. I mean, that's crazy. But that's, yeah, I mean, that's, you know.
It works.
People do it. They feel bad if they don't, you know.
Somebody, I think, on Buzz posted that you can't really do customer support with a Python script, unfortunately.
Not yet.
Google's trying.
Yeah, they're trying AI. But,
it's not really working. Not really working. Moving along to our next item, the Windows 7 feature of the week. By the way,
yes, sir.
I just want to say something. Yesterday, we were doing Security Now with Steve Gibson, and he said, I've heard that the Windows 7 firewall has inbound and outbound. And I checked, and boy, that firewall in Windows 7 is much upgraded. I'm very impressed. And then he was saying
the word but's going to occur. Huh? But. Huh? I know the word but is coming.
No, I was very impressed. Microsoft's really made it a real firewall.
Sure.
With rules and everything. I'm totally blown away. I hadn't looked at it yet. And then Steve said, well, I was having trouble copying files from the we were using a Pogo plug to put his files up. And he said, you know, that it's unreliable because it's just a drag and drop copy. And somebody in the chat room said, well, use RoboCopy. And I didn't, you know, RoboCopy was something that came around with the NT4, I think. But you had to install the...
I think it was originally a... what do they call that? Like a resource kit tool.
Right, exactly. It was Windows Resource Kit. But it's now in Vista, and it comes with 7.
Yeah, yep, yep.
I didn't know that. And boy, that's great too.
Sure.
So there are a lot of hidden features in Windows 7, you know?
Sure. Yeah, well, that's actually if you think about it, that's the Windows 7 mantra, right? We're just going to hide stuff now. You know?
So, it's great. You'll figure it out.
It's all about the hiding.
Well, let's get a Windows. That's why I'm glad you're doing the Windows 7 features of the week.
Yeah, I was thinking about this actually just today. I want to make sure, you know, as we get further into this, you know, you have to make sure you don't reuse a feature, you know. And I was looking down the list of features we'd used so far, and I want to use the big ones up front, you know, if I can, or where I can.
Use the big one up front.
Yeah. So, but this, I was thinking, you know, I wonder how long this could go. Like, how long can we do this?
Forever.
You know? Yeah. It could forever. Go for a long time.
Go ahead and cherry pick. It's okay. Because more will come along.
So this week's feature of the week is Aero Themes, once known as Aero Styles. And it is it's what used to be that thing where you right-click the desktop and, you know, properties. And now
personalize.
What it really is just a way to combine things like wallpapers, sound schemes, aeroglass colors, and the like into a single unit called a theme. And I guess the big change between this and previous versions is the aeroglass color stuff, which is pretty nice, and also the ability to have multiple wallpapers that rotate on a schedule, which is really nice. Some of the stuff that used to be non-theme related, like the classic UI and the high contrast UIs, have all been rolled into that. And of course, Microsoft ships a bunch of high quality wallpapers, which you can incorporate into themes as well. So I think Leo's got the page up. I've already written a very lengthy article.
Nice article, yeah.
Aero themes, yeah. So I would just say, there are a couple of downsides, and we've actually had at least one pick of the week that can circumvent one of these. One of them is that it's not particularly savvy to multi-monitors. Which I'm just amazed by. This is something that you would have thought by Windows 7 we would have figured this out. It would be nice to be able to do something like paste a panoramic across two monitors, or have a different, image on different monitors, or, some intelligent management of multiple monitor images. But it doesn't do that. And the other thing is, if you bring up an Explorer window, one of the things you'll notice is that there's sort of a pale blue background color to the window chrome, the Explorer toolbar and so forth. It'd be kind of nice, I think, that as you colored the glass of the window, if the subtle color of the Explorer window itself changed to match, so for example, if you chose a green glass, that the color of the window would be light green, but it's not. It's always going to be light blue. So it's not perfect, but it is dramatically better than it was in XP especially, and also better than it was in Windows Vista. But there's still some issues, but that's why we make new software versions. So hopefully those things will improve.
It's one of the first things I do when I get a new Windows 7 install, is play with these settings. And it really does look beautiful. I love the new desktops.
Yeah, one of the things gorgeous. I do, and I probably did this as a tip, months and months ago, is you can go into the advanced system properties, and you can turn off and turn on certain animations and effects and so forth. And one of the things that I always do, and I just think it makes a cleaner desktop, is I turn off the shadow under Windows.
Oh.
Because to me, it looks like a smudge, and I think it makes the whole thing look kind of dirty. Huh. And if you turn it off, the windows take on a very clean look, which I happen to prefer.
Oh, I'll have to try that.
So if you wanted to do that, you go into System Properties, which is, right-click Computer and choose Properties. And then you go to Advanced System Settings. Let's bring this sucker up. And then in the Advanced tab, under Performance, you click Settings. It is really buried deep. And then in that list of custom settings, one of the items says Show Shadows Under Windows. And I just uncheck that, click OK. Click OK and, get rid of system properties. And then you get this really clean look around all the window borders. It's nice. So that was kind of like a free tip.
It was a free tip.
It was a free tip.
Absolutely no cost or obligation. No salesman will call.
Free tip.
Your Windows 7 feature of the week. And now, ladies and gentlemen, your Windows 7 tip of the week. The actual tip. The tip of the tip.
Well, right, and this one will result in a free book for somebody, unlike the last one. This is from Rudy Rabb. He mentions that there's a multi-select option in folder options now in Windows 7, and that's true. So in previous versions, actually, I think this might have been in Vista as well, but previous to that, for the tablet PC OS, Microsoft added this ability to add a checkbox next to each item in a Windows Explorer window. The idea being that if you were using a stylus to interact with the system, it made it hard to do multi-select, right? Because we could do like a control select very easily with the mouse, but when you have a stylus, it's difficult. But even if you're using a mouse or a pointing device of some kind, like the little nubbin you have on these ThinkPad laptops, multi-select can be difficult for some people. And you can actually enable this little checkbox type select on any computer. It doesn't have to be a tablet PC. So if you go into folder options, right, which is available through Windows Explorer, hit the Alt button to bring down the menu bar. Tools, and then folder options. And then you go to the View tab. One of the checkboxes is use checkboxes to select items. And if you enable that, there'll be a little box next to every item in an Explorer window. And then you can select things kind of willy-nilly. And then when you apply some option, it will be applied to all of them. It's just a different way to do multi-select. And as Rudy notes, It does not interfere with shift select, which is that way we select big blocks of things all at one time.
You know, it's funny because tying it to your previous tip, that it occurs in the desktops. If you hover over the desktops, you'll see
it is also on the desktop. That's right.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. I didn't know you could turn.
Yeah, you know, the Windows desktop has always been kind of a pseudo Explorer environment. It doesn't offer all of the view options that you get in a real Explorer window. And the funny thing is, over time, they've added a few more features here and there. So you can make the icons bigger now.
Right.
They're getting there, you know. So, but yes, in Windows 7, that is one of the things they added to the desktop as well. So anytime you interact with objects in the shell, whether they're in an Explorer window or on the desktop, this will work.
All right, my friends, we are ready now to move along to our Audible pick of the week before we get to our software picks of the week. And there are, at last count, although you always sneak some more in, three of them.
Right. Yeah,
there may be more. Okay, still three. Okay.
I am a sneaky man.
You're a sneaky son of a gun. But before we do that, I do want to mention our friends at audible.com. This is a great place to get your audio entertainment. I know you listen to podcasts, so it seems like it'd be fairly natural for you to try audio books as well. And I'll tell you, I know not every one of you is using Audible, but so many of you come to me. I get letters every day, emails every day from people who say, you know, I just got one today who said, I started with the gold account. I'm up to a platinum account now, doing two books a month. And I just love Audible. Thank you. And this was actually a note, not to me, but to Audible, saying thank you for sponsoring TWiT. And one of the reasons they like it is because they have been Audible members for a while, and they like the picks that our TWiT hosts do. And that's one of the fun things. There is a certain amount of social to Audible. Whenever you meet another Audible user, and I have several friends, real life friends as well as hosts on the shows, who are Audible fans, and whenever we meet, it's like, well, what do you listen to? What's good? What's the latest?
Yeah.
This is from a doctor. I don't know if I should say his name. I don't think he would give us permission to use his name, but he's a doctor in Culver City, California. He said, I just want to let you guys know I'm a huge fan of Audible and that my passion is fed by the coverage of your service on the TWiT network. I hear great book reviews several times a week on various TWiT shows, and I probably order half my books based on these reviews. I originally signed up with Audible a few years ago based on TWiT advertising. Today, I just switched from a monthly gold to a yearly platinum account. I expect to be with Audible for a long time to come, and I just wanted to express my enthusiasm and urge you to continue and grow your relationship with TWiT. It really is a wonderful marriage because they always have interesting guests on the show who are more than happy to share their Audible picks, which are very much in line with the interests of those of us who listen to podcasts.
It's a testimonial.
It is. It's an unsolicited
testimonial. This one goes out to little Timmy.
Your request. So let us get a pick from Mr. Paul Thurrott. Yeah. Now, the reason we do this is because when you go to audible.com/windows, you can sign up for that gold account, and the first book is free and yours to keep. You can cancel at any time. So this is a good place to get your free book. What are you recommending these days, Paul?
Yeah, I mentioned last week, you know, my friend Joe, who I stay with in Seattle, is a huge Audible fan. You know, he has over 200 audiobooks. We spent a lot of time talking about Audible books and what the better ones were that we've experienced and so forth. He recommended this one to me last week as well, and I've been listening to it since I left Seattle. In fact, I was listening to it downstairs in his house, I think probably the last night before I left, and his wife heard me laughing and came to investigate.
why is Paul so happy?
Yeah, what's going on down there? It's called The Areas of My Expertise by John Hodgman.
Love it.
Yeah, and also narrated by the author. I don't typically...
And Jonathan Colton.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
It's actually abridged. I was surprised to see it. It's 6.5 hours long, if I remember.
They have to say that because it's actually got more material than the print book. It's just different.
Yeah, I was
going to
say, I mean, it's hilarious. I mean, it's absolutely hilarious. Yeah.
You're not losing anything. That's not really a fair statement to say.
Yeah,
it's abridged.
I was surprised.
Yeah.
By that.
Yeah. There's some things, I guess, that are in the printed book that aren't there, but there's stuff in this, like Jonathan Colton singing, that isn't in the print book.
Yeah, and of course, if you're not clear or didn't know this, this is the PC guy, right?
Yes, from a Mac. A PC, yeah. Right. I love it. Let me play a little bit of it. I'll just play a little bit of it so you can hear Jonathan. I think John Colton and Jonathan.
It's the last thing I wanted to do, and I suspect the last thing you wanted as well. But I think we both knew it was inevitable. Certainly my publisher felt that it was, frequently pointing to my contract and its damned inevitability clause, which I should never have agreed to. But I did, and so now, here we are. I say good evening, though of course I don't know what time it is where you are. That is one of the defining sorrows of books and audiobooks, that we cannot see each other.
This is really...
Of course, it might have been different had my publisher inserted the camera I designed to fit snugly into your audio-playing device in order to spy on you, but this was determined to be too expensive and too illegal, and so we are left once again to our imaginations.
He is so good. You got to listen to this. Just, I could, you know, of course you're laughing.
Yeah.
It's like, it's this guy has such a great dry wit, and only he could read this, and it's just, it's like 7 minutes with John.
Love it. And love it.
Love it. You're right. Great book.
Yep.
The Areas of My Expertise. You can get it free right now. And by the way, his newest one is also available in Audible. So if you get the Platinum account, you can get both. That's more information than you require. And he reads that one as well. Audible.com/windows. Get your first book free. Check out the win-win sale, by the way. $4.95. A bunch of books we've recommended in the past are available for just $5, but get the subscription. I think when you get an Audible subscription, you're getting the best deal. Audible.com/windows. We thank them so much for their support of Windows Weekly. All right, Paul, I think we can move on to your software picks now.
Finally. All right. So there are three. These, you know, certainly will not apply to everybody, so I guess pick any one or two that you care for. The developers in the audience will be interested in the IE9 platform preview, which is available at ietestdrive.com. The important thing to know about this platform preview is that it can actually run side by side with your existing version of IE, so it does not blow it away, as did all previous IE betas, which is kind of nice. Gives you a chance to test the new rendering engine, see how it works on your own sites, and you know, you compare the performance properties of the system. The other one is the Windows Phone 7 developer tools. They're all free. These involve such things as there'll be a Visual Studio Express edition that will work for the phone. But right now you can use the Visual Studio 2010 RC version with the Windows Phone add-in. There's an emulator environment, right, for the, so you can test your UI on something that looks like the phone. There is a beta of, I think it's Expression Blend, which is the UI designer, a tool you can use for Windows Phone, and also Silverlight 4, which is the developer framework that works on the phone. And you can find all that stuff and more at developer.windowsphone.com. And then the third one, and I think this will be of interest to a wider audience, is the software we mentioned previously, Windows XP Mode and Windows Virtual PC for Windows 7 have both been updated and now do not require hardware virtualization. So if this was something you wanted to run in the past and couldn't, it is now available to you, assuming you're running Windows 7.
Three picks, and you did them in like 3 seconds.
I know. You never know how this stuff's going to go.
Are you hungry for lunch? Is that what it is?
It's is it lunchtime?
I guess it is lunchtime. Yes, it is.
I had a late breakfast. I'm not hungry yet.
Yeah,
I am going to go down to our show today and...
Is Mix going on today some more?
No, I mean, my company's having their own shows. We actually have, we're in the Bellagio, so we have shows going on for virtualization, for Windows 7 deployment, and for SharePoint. And I actually spoke yesterday, just for an hour, about Windows 7. Really kind of a comedy routine, and I gave away some copies of Windows 7, which was kind of cool, so... I could tell, you know, you get started talking, you can tell these people are thinking, oh man, I just wasted my time. I came down here at 9 o'clock in the morning and it's like, hold on, I have free software. And then they all sit down, you know. Got to keep them in the
free
seats.
Free software? Okay.
Oh, you say free?
Free. Well, that's what Microsoft does too, don't they? They get like give away copies of stuff and they get you. They get you that way. All right. Well, if you're not in Vegas yet, head over to Vegas. Just don't bring your iPhone.
You can bring it, just don't expect to use it.
You can have a good time in Vegas, but don't try to use your iPhone. When you're in Vegas, they only accept Windows Mobile Phone 7 Series.
Oh, I can't wait for that future. I have to dream that it's coming.
It's not even acronizable. Acronymizable.
There were Windows a lot of complaints about that name, by the way. It was interesting to see their response to that.
Oh, you know, it's
just
name.
Windows Phone.
It's no worse than the iPad. We've gotten used to that.
Speaking of which, did you...
Of course.
That was one of the things I was in a Microsoft meeting, and we're in a round table, and we're using all their advanced office tools for communication and, you know, yada, 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 and all this stuff. And I guess this guy was IMing me. It was the morning that the iPad was released, you know, was available for pre-order. And we had to get to the campus at 8:30 in the morning. It was pouring and rain, terrible. And I was doing something on the web, and this guy is IMing me as part of the demo, and I didn't see it. So finally he said, "Hey, Paul, think you could answer that IM?" So I typed into the IM box, you know, which of course goes up to the projected screen so everyone can see it.
Oh, dear. Wrote,
"Sorry, I was busy pre-ordering the iPad."
See? Can I get you one while I'm here?
Just in case you people think I'm one-sided, no. I toss it back in the other direction.
I ordered one too. Actually, I ordered four.
I ordered two.
Yeah, you can only order two, and then I had.
It's not clear that I'm going to get two, but I ordered one normal pre-order.
Yeah,
and I ordered a second one for in-store pickup.
Ah,
and I will keep whichever one I get first, and then we'll see how it goes with the second.
They say, I believe, that it comes on Saturday, April 3rd.
This is a tough one because obviously Saturday, April 3rd, you're going to want to be up early to go to the store. So, you know, what are you going to do?
It's a good point. I should order one for pickup.
You know what I'm saying?
You're right.
Store's going to open in the morning.
Right.
I think
might have to wait till 2. I really want it to come. It's Saturday, so I'm doing the radio show.
I'm hoping they screw up and it comes on Friday.
Yeah, no. They're good. Yeah. They're real good. I would be really cool if... while I'm doing the radio show, the UPS guy or FedEx guy comes to the door, knocks. I say, "Come in," and he brings the iPad live on the air.
Oh, you're actually doing the show.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping for.
I mean, you should have someone out front who can make sure that happens.
Yeah, Jammer B will be there ready to escort him in. I'm crossing my fingers. Just looking for some drama. Actually, Scoble is lining up a party Friday night at the Palo Alto store. He calls it Steve Jobs' home store. Apparently last time for the iPhone, for every year for the iPhone, there's a big crowd there. Many Apple employees go there. Jobs shows up. It's quite an event.
I won't be there.
No, you wouldn't.
I'll be. In fact, you know, it's sad. We have an Apple store in Dedham. It's a small store. You know, some of them are small.
Yeah.
In fact, the Apple store is smaller than my hotel room.
Oh, that's the mall store. Yeah, those mall stores are small. Yeah.
It's small. It is a store that I cannot pick an iPad up at, right? So it's not at every single store.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So I have to go down to the South Shore Plaza or to Natick or something.
Yeah. I just wanted two so I could hold them like Moses with the tablets.
Nice.
I have brought you the tablets.
Yeah, we have the 20, 10 commandments.
Yes, exactly. I should give credit to...
That's Mel Brooks, isn't it?
Real Files, who... drew that image for us in the chat room. And Mel Brooks, of course, who gets credit for the joke. Well, Paul, thank you. Enjoy the rest of your stay in Vegas. When do you get to go home?
Tomorrow? What's today? Thursday? Yeah, tomorrow.
Oh, good. All right. Well, enjoy. You know, you get one more night in Vegas. And just remember one thing, Paul.
My wife's going to be so mad when I order room service on Saturday morning.
Honey, where's my coffee, bacon, eggs over easy? These curtains just won't open anymore.
Where's the remote control for the window?
You do get spoiled. All right, Paul, have a great trip home, and thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time on Windows Weekly. Hey, before we go, one more thing. I just got the yellow post-it note. I have it in my little hand here. Let me show you what the post-it note says. It says, Windows Weekly video is available on iTunes.
Right.
Good news. That means we've got our process down and we are able to put the video of this show up on iTunes. So if you're a listener into the audio, you might want to go to the iTunes store and search for the video. Many of our shows now are available on video. Soon, all of them will be.